that there is hope for the world, but not in what man can do for himself, but in the kingdom of God, referred to in the Lord's Prayer as recorded in Matthew 6:10. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done in earth as it is in heaven. When will this kingdom come? The Bible tells us that the world is approaching a time of trouble such as never was before, but that immediately following this time of trouble, the kingdom will be set up, and then God will wipe away tears from off all faces by the blessings which that kingdom will bring to mankind. Let us turn to Zephaniah 3:8-9. Therefore wait ye upon me, saith the Lord, until the day that I rise up to the prey. For my determination is to gather the nations, that I may assemble the kingdoms, to pour upon them mine indignation, even all my fierce anger. For all the earth shall be devoured with the fire of my jealousy. The earth which will be devoured is not the literal earth, but the figurative earth, representing the present organization of society, which is based on selfishness. The fire is a picture of the time of trouble. The nations are being gathered together as never before in organized groups, such as the United Nations and the Soviet bloc, as well as in labor groups and combinations of corporations along business lines, through the rapid means of travel and the swift means of communication, such as the radio, the television, the newspapers, and magazines, so that they might be prepared to enter into this time of trouble and feel the brunt of God's retribution and punishment for their pride and selfishness. In Daniel 12:4, the Lord foretold that at this time many shall run to and fro, and knowledge shall be increased. This is exactly what has occurred in the past 200 years, but because mankind have been selfish and each one looking out only for himself, these blessings of rapid travel and increase of knowledge among the masses is driving the world into this very time of trouble. And so the prophet Daniel, who foretold this condition of things, says, and at that time shall Michael stand up, the great prince which standeth for the children of thy people, and there shall be a time of trouble such as never was since there was a nation, even to that same time. In the text we quoted before, Zephaniah 3:8-9, after telling about this time of trouble, it goes on to say, for then will I turn to the people a pure language, that they may all call upon the name of the Lord to serve him with one consent. This shows that the literal earth will not be literally burned up, because there are people left who will pass through this time of trouble and who are not in harmony with the Lord. For this reason, the Lord will give them the true message concerning his kingdom. If you were to come to a crossroad and several different signs pointing in different directions all claim to be pointing to the road to Milwaukee, you would be confused and would not know in which way to go. Likewise, today we have the Catholic sign and the Methodist sign and the Baptist sign and many others, each claiming to be the true church and to be the road to heaven. We also have the Democratic Party and the Republican Party and the Communist Party and other groups, each claiming to be the way to peace and happiness and prosperity. But in the millennium, after the time of trouble, the people will get the pure, simple message of God's kingdom, which will then be set up. They will then learn that Jesus Christ is the King of earth, And that God's provision for mankind is not eternal torment, but restitution or restoration to human perfection here on earth as enjoyed by Adam and Eve in the Garden of Eden. In Acts 3:19-21, Peter calls this restitution of all things and says that it will be times of refreshing. This will result in the conversion of the world, or as the prophet expressed it in the text we quoted, that they may all call upon the name of the Lord to serve him with one consent. In Habakkuk 2:14 we read, "For the earth shall be filled with the knowledge of the glory of the Lord as the waters cover the sea." You cannot walk out on the ocean bed without getting all wet. And so in the millennium, everyone will be blackened.
God's plans and purposes and his loving character. That will also be the time for the dead to be made alive. For Daniel, in the 12th chapter, where he speaks of the time of trouble, points out that following this time of trouble, many that sleep in the dust of the earth will awake. Does this refer to literal sleep? No, this is picture language. It implies that just as the person who is asleep is unconscious, but in the morning, when he awakens from his sleep, will pick up the threads of his conscious life and will resume his activities where he dropped them the night before, so those who are the dead are fully dead and will, because of the divine plan of God, be awakened from the dead and made alive again in God's kingdom. The church will be raised as spirit beings in a heavenly home, and the world will come back as human beings in an earthly home. Jesus used this same figure of speech in John 11:11-14. "These things said Jesus, and after that he said unto them, Our friend Lazarus sleepeth, but I go that I may awake him out of sleep. Then said his disciples, Lord, if he sleep, he shall do well. Howbeit, Jesus spake of his death, but they thought that he had spoken of taking of rest in sleep. Then said Jesus unto them plainly, Lazarus is dead. How did Jesus awaken him out of sleep? It was by making him alive again as a human being, just as he was before he died. Likewise, in the millennium, many will be made alive again as human beings, just as they were before they died." We read in John 12:1-2 about a supper at the home of Lazarus, where there was great rejoicing because he had been made alive again. Then Jesus, 6 days before the Passover, came to Bethany, where Lazarus was, which had been dead, whom he raised from the dead. There they made him a supper, and Martha served, but Lazarus was one of them that sat at the table with him. This is only a sample of the millions of resurrection parties they will have in the millennial kingdom, when the long lost and loved ones will be made alive again in answer to prayer, and when preparations are made to receive the individual loved ones back again from death. Someone may ask the question, where was Lazarus the 4 days he was dead? The answer is that he was in the Bible hell, which is the condition of complete death. The very fact that Lazarus did not say anything about being in heaven or in eternal torment shows conclusively that he was completely dead those 4 days. Do the scriptures teach that the dead are dead? Yes, for instance, in Psalm 6:5, it says, "For in the grave there is no remembrance of thee. In the grave who shall give thee thanks?" Again, in Psalm 146:4, "His breath goeth forth, He returneth to his earth. In that very day his thoughts perish. In Ecclesiastes 9:5, the dead know not anything. In the Old Testament, we have the Hebrew word Sheol, which is translated hell, when the translators thought it would favor eternal torment, so to translate it. But it's translated grave when it would upset the eternal torment theory to translate it hell. Let us notice a few examples. In Genesis 24:38, where Jacob says that if harm should come to his son Benjamin, it would bring my gray hairs with sorrow in the grave. The Hebrew word is Sheol, which was translated 31 times hell, and always means the condition of non-existence. But Jacob was a good man, and they did not want to put him into eternal torment, so they used the word grave instead of the word hell. Besides, according to their theory, only the soul goes to hell. And if they had used the word hell, it would have meant that his body with its gray hairs would go there. According to the eternal torment theory, if one once goes there, he stays there, and there is no hope of a release. If they had translated the word Sheol by the word hell in 1 Samuel 2:6, it would have upset this idea. And so they use the word grave. The Lord killeth and maketh alive. He bringeth down to the grave and bringeth up. This is in harmony with John 5:28-29, where Jesus says that all in their graves shall hear the voice of the Son of Man and come forth, both they that have done good and they that have done evil. We also notice Psalm 31:17, where it speaks of the wicked and says, let them be silent in the grave. If the translators had used the word hell, it would have upset another one of their ideas. They think that the ones who are in eternal torment are always shrieking and groaning because of their miseries. But this text would say that they were silent. All of these texts make sense when we see that the Bible, hell, is the grave, the condition of death, oblivion. This fits in with Psalm 49:14. Like sheep they are laid in the grave, Hebrew Sheol. Death shall feed upon them, and the upright shall have dominion over them in the morning. Just as sheep follow a leader, so all of Adam's children are following him one by one and going into the tomb, the condition of death, Sheol, the Bible hell. This text thus clearly teaches that everyone goes into the Bible hell. But who are here referred to as the upright, who will have dominion over them in the morning? This refers to Jesus and the church, who are selected during this gospel age. They have accepted Jesus Christ as their Redeemer and have made a full consecration to God to walk in the footsteps of their Master in the way of righteousness and self-sacrifice. This class are the overcomers of this gospel age and will be given the reward of the divine nature in a heavenly salvation, and will be associated with Jesus in the kingdom as glorious spirit beings, and have the work for 1,000 years to be kings and priests and judges over the world of mankind. This will be the new day of Christ, referred to in Psalm 49:14, in the morning. During that 1,000-year period, the dead will be brought to this earth and will be given opportunity to gain an earthly salvation as human beings. Take, for instance, the little babies that were put to death by King Herod when he tried to kill the infant Jesus. He ordered all the babies than 2 years of age to be killed. This caused considerable grief, and the Lord sent these mothers a message of comfort, saying, "Thus saith the Lord, refrain thy voice from weeping, and thine eyes from tears. Thy work shall be rewarded, saith the Lord, and they shall come again from the land of the enemy." Notice that according to this scripture, these children are in the land of the enemy. Heaven could not be the land of the enemy. Eternal torment would be the land of the enemy, but the Bible does not teach eternal torment. And besides, the children could not have done anything to require such a punishment. No, this land of the enemy was death. Therefore, the promise that they would come again from the land of the enemy meant that they would be made alive and come back to this earth as little babies, just as they were when they died. You will notice that the word again is used. The prophet goes on to say, "And there is hope in thine end, saith the Lord, that thy children shall come again to their own border." And their own borders was in the land of Palestine. This was the land that they could come to again. They will then grow up into men and women and will become perfect human beings. This will then become their everlasting home. How about the old men and women when they are awakened from the dead in the times of restitution in the millennium? An interesting text along this line is found in Job 33:25. "His flesh shall be fresher than a child's, and he shall return to the days of his youth." What a hope will be to those who have learned that as a result of obedience to the laws of the kingdom, and as a reward for helping others to get back into harmony with God, they will find the strength and vigor they had when they were younger, coming back into their legs and arms with all the glow of health they had when they were young men and women. The signs of old age, such as gray hair, poor eyesight, and poor hearing, and the aches and pains of old age, will gradually disappear. And then they obey that new kingdom and put forth the effort to walk up the highway of holiness, they will gradually grow into a beauty of features and a shapeliness of body which are characteristic of perfect human beings. The physical and mental perfection and the moral perfection will be objectives well worth striving for. Those who are outwardly moral but not inwardly will not be able to stand the testing during the little season at the close of the millennial reign of Christ, which all must pass to gain eternal life. And these will compose the sheep class, referred to in Matthew 25:34. "Then shall the king say unto them on his right hand, Come, ye blessed of my Father, inherit the kingdom prepared for you from the foundation of the world." Note also Ezekiel 37:25, "And they shall dwell in the land which I have given unto Jacob my servant, wherein your fathers have dwelt, and they shall dwell therein, even they and their children's children forever, and my servant David shall be their prince forever." There are today many who have lost loved ones who will get a pleasant surprise after the kingdom is established here on earth to find that they can have their dead relatives return to life from their sleep in the dust of the earth in answer to prayer. Take, for instance, the story in the magazine of Jimmy, the red-headed freckle boy who lived next door. You remember him as a lad who fought for his dad with quite a hero, who could lick any foe and
homeschool. His mind is full of his and his outdoor sports with a thought woman and a young girl. When he came one day, he was 18 years old. His outdoor sports with a thought woman and a young girl. When came one day, he was 18 years old. There was no band, no flags, no ceremonies, just a car we tramped outside. Well, so long, he said, I guess that is for me. He kisses his mother and holds out his hand to his dad. He does not know whether to shake hands with him or kiss him. Then suddenly and impulsively, he kisses a girl who is standing by, all embarrassed. This was the first time he had kissed her. Well, so long, he says. All his father could say was good luck. The door slammed, and that was that. Another boy had gone to war. A few months later, the parents get a Red Star telegram. The Secretary of War regrets to express his deep regret that your son was killed in action. Oh, the sorrow of those parents. They knew that they would not see their boy again. And oh, what joy it will be for those parents to have their son made alive again and to be just as he was that day when in his awkward, clumsy way he had said goodbye. There was also in the newspaper the story of some people who came back to their home one night after spending the evening visiting with some friends. They found someone at their front door trying to get into the house. They called the police, but found that it was not a burglar, but an old lady who had escaped from a rest home. She was in her second childhood and used to live in that very house years before, when her children were little and before death had taken her husband from her. She wanted to come back to her old life and enjoy again the love of her little children and the love of her husband. She wanted to be young again and work hard for her family and be back again in the sunshine of their happiness. But those happy days were now past. This is the part of the desires in all hearts. And such desires will have a fulfillment for the world of mankind in the times of restitution, after the nations have been badly shaken in the time of trouble towards which the world is now drifting. Note the words of Haggai 2:7, and I will shake all nations, and the desire of all nations shall come. We also read the Lord's promise in Revelation 21:4. And God shall wipe away all tears from their eyes, and there shall be no more death, neither sorrow nor crying, neither shall there be any more pain, for the former things are passed away. When the former things, the conditions that now prevail on the earth, will give way to these new arrangements here on earth, then will be fulfilled the promise in Deuteronomy 11:21, that your days may be multiplied, and the days of your children, in the land which the Lord sware unto your fathers to give them, as the days of heaven upon the earth. Someone may ask, does it really say heaven and earth? Yes, it does, in Deuteronomy 11:21. I can imagine someone saying, there is one thing that has me puzzled, and that is how God could condemn all the one named Adam. Was that just? We answer that it was both just and very wise. When Adam disobeyed, the penalty of death passed not only on him, but also on all his children, as we read in Romans 5:12. Wherefore, as by one man sin entered into the world, and death by sin, and so death passed upon all men, for that all have sinned. By the law of heredity, the penalty of death passed upon all of Adam's children, and all were born imperfect. But Jesus, another perfect man, with an unborn race in his loins, was a ransom for Adam and all of his children as a result of the same law of heredity. The alternates of heaven or eternal torment were not sent before Adam, but the alternates of life everlasting as a human being here on earth, or death everlasting, as we read in Genesis 2:17. But of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil, thou shalt not eat of it. For in the day that thou eatest thereof, thou shalt surely die. Notice that there is nothing said here that eternal torment would be the penalty, but only the complete loss of life for his soul, his being. The fact that Jesus went into death as the substitute sacrifice for Adam and all of his children guarantees that they will have the right to come back from the condition of death to this earth as human beings with the privilege of an individual trial under more favorable circumstances. If they make mistakes, they can be forgiven because of the same ransom sacrifice of Jesus Christ. They will have this great advantage in that they will have had an experience with evil in their lifetime, and then an experience with good in the millennial kingdom, and then many as free moral agents equipped with knowledge will gladly and willingly choose to serve God and obey Him. This new opportunity to become holy and thus perfect, become perfect human beings, in Isaiah 35:8, is called the highway of holiness because it will be an easy way to travel and will bring the ones who are willing and obedient up to holiness. Notice how it says that the redeemed shall walk there, and the ransomed of the Lord shall return and come to Zion with songs and everlasting joy upon their heads. Coming back to our theme question, what is wrong with the world today? We see that the answer is that they are heading for a time of trouble because the light and knowledge of our day is not accompanied with the spirit of love and justice. We also see that this was foretold in the Bible, but we rejoice.